Episode 11. This is Chad Benton, your host, along with co-host Rich Howe and Colin Wood. First thing we got to get into for the episode is DraftKings. We encourage everyone to go to DraftKings now that sports betting is legal in Tennessee and many other states around the country. And with DraftKings, we've got a big UFC fight coming up. Conor McGregor is returning to the octagon. So there's an awesome thing going. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to turn $1 into $257 if McGregor wins by first round knockout this weekend. Place your bet and watch the fist fly this weekend. That's code THPN for new players to get $257 if McGregor wins by first round knockout this weekend for a limited time only at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older in New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com Sportsbook for details. And gambling problems, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT if you have a gambling problem. So, yeah, DraftKings.com, awesome. Get out there and have a little fun with the sports betting, hockey, any other sports you watch. It's always fun to get in there with sports betting. So DraftKings, check out the DraftKings Sportsbook app for that. And with that said, it's episode 11. We have a lot of reaction tonight to the Preds as they, since last time we saw you guys, it was the Preds have played two games. They just got done playing against the Carolina Hurricanes. It just took a tough loss. They also beat the Columbus Blue Jackets on Saturday night. Two very different opponents, Rich and Colin. Rich, how are you doing? How'd you watch the game, man?
From the comfort of the couch. Both nights, just two different games, but you know, we didn't get this one, but they will play again tomorrow night, and I think they're going to exact their revenge.
Yeah, I did the same from the couch, streaming the games up here in Cincinnati, so had to kind of finagle a little bit, but was able to get to see all the games so far. I agree with Rich. It's I think this team is tenacious and hungry, and we'll kind of get into that in a little bit, but I'm excited to see him play him again, turn around tomorrow night, and hopefully get some revenge, especially with Ducey and Gold for us. But it's gonna be fun.
Yeah. So the Preds, they've got this new defensive style of play, and we've seen it in all three games so far. Like I said, play two very different opponents in Columbus and Carolina. Let's start with the positive. So they won their season opener against Columbus, and then on Saturday night they turned around and kind of put together the same defensive game plan. And once again with UC Saros in net, and once again got another win to open that two-game sweep. So Colin, kind of what were some of your observations from the Saturday night win against Columbus to go to 2-0?
Yeah, Saturday night, I think it was very much a bend but don't break style up until the third period. They played well. There was there's still some rusty moments. I think we saw it in tonight's game too, but I think they're shaking the rust off. I will say the standout to me has so far been our third defensive pairing of Benning and Barwieski. It's been awesome to not have to worry about when that third pairing defensively is on the ice. Because the last few years, it's kind of been like our top two pairings are solid, and then that third pairing gets on there, and you're like, I don't know about it. But what stood out to me, especially in Saturday's game and a little bit tonight's game, is that because that third pairing is doing well, it's taking some time away from the first and second pairing, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. If you can stick them out there and rest up the top two pairings a little bit, that does really well. But, we opened it up in the third, and then we never looked back. And it's especially on Saturday night, Forsberg just continues his tear, and he did that into tonight as well. But, it's that third pairing and the play of Forsberg right now are incredible.
I would totally agree with that, but I think the saving grace for Saturday night was Saros. I think he had a really good game. He had a lot of good stops. The Predators turned the puck over a few times, and he made some good stops. He also got some puck luck. I know that one that rolled right across the line, and last year that probably would have rolled in for him it would have, but you know, this time, you know, it didn't. So that was obviously good. And then we saw Ellis make a dive and save, and Ekholm got in front mm-hmm. of the net. And then, you know, last year, if they would have been down, you know, 1-2, the game would have been over. You know, it just gets in their heads and they didn't play well, but I think that team is behind us, hopefully.
I agree with that, especially like you look at all three games we played behind at one point or another, and it's never stopped the team from climbing back in and then, you know, eventually opening it up. I mean, obviously it didn't work out for us tonight, but there were some chances. I mean, tonight I think there was a lot of issues, but there was some bad puck luck. There were some times that one shot, I think it was off of either Duchesne or Johansson, that just it rang off the top bar. And I'm like, how did that not go in? Because it bounces downward, and it looked like it was in, but they waved it off. And yeah,
and Holla too had one hit the bar and roll out.
Yeah,
yeah, and so Saros had a massive game in that win on Saturday night. 42 saves on 44 shots. You know, because the season opener, he wasn't tested quite as much. It was more of a conservative effort, and it was just kind of like he made the saves when he had to, but it wasn't like anything crazy. Saturday night, he had to actually step up and kind of save the team to a degree. And so that was the biggest takeaway for me in that game was Saros with 42 saves. I mean, he's really trying to claim that top spot for the Preds as the starting goaltender. He's up against a lot of pressure, let's be honest, guys.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, he's stepped up to it. It's been solid play. The biggest thing is just making sure it's consistent, you know, from night to night. And it looks like we're going to get to see him tomorrow night. So hopefully he'll get to apply it to this mm-hmm. team, because we know they jump on you so fast. If you give them the opportunity, they'll take advantage of it. And I think the story tonight is high danger shots. It wasn't even Pekka's fault that we fell into the situation we fell into, but he faced, you know, upwards of 10 high danger shots. You can't do that. You can't leave the guy in that situation. We're lucky the score is what it is because Pekka played a great game. But, you know, Saros is also going to need to bring his A game because he's going to see these same offensive weapons and these same guys that can really jump on a game pretty fast tomorrow night.
Yeah, I agree. I think another issue that they had tonight was seemed like the referees were making some weird calls. I don't know. After Fabro drew that penalty, I know that Forsberg got tripped, and they let that fly, and then they kicked Duchesne out of the circle after he won the faceoff and
dropped the damn puck. I mean,
I know, right? And then they did it, and then he tried to do it again when Holla was in there, and I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense. Like the calls just were not good, in my opinion.
I agree with you. I mean, it happened in Columbus too.
It was an end to end game. It was back and forth, which you kind of expect it from a team like Carolina. I mean, that's what they live off of. They feast on you. They pounce on you quick. You can't give them any easy transition opportunities. And unfortunately, the Preds, it wasn't that many times that happened, but the few times it did happen and the few times they did slip up. You know, you had Shvestnikov, very hard name to say. He burned him. He burned him for the first goal. And it was just that's what the Canes do. That's why they're rated as the top two team in the division by most people, right there with Tampa Bay. And that's why I have them picked as winning the division, is because they could be having a horrible game. They can be like, you can think that you got this figured out. And it kind of felt that way for even when it was 0-0 for a while and you're waiting for both teams to break through. I was like, the Preds have had this under control. Like, they're playing well. Mm-hmm. They're doing the same thing they did in the first two games against Columbus. And then all it takes is Carolina to just get one of their snipers they have to get loose and make a goaltender look bad. And that's kind of what they did to Pekka tonight. It wasn't that Pekka Rinne played bad tonight, especially considering he hadn't played a game. He hadn't started a real game in over 10 months. And that's what Carolina does. They make a goaltender that's playing well actually look bad on the stat sheet. And what's really going to suck is there's going to be people who didn't really watch the game. Maybe they're a casual fan. Maybe they're on the on that bus of Pekka needs to go. He's over the hill. He's done. Why is he still on the team? And they're going to look at that stat sheet. They're going to look at that save percentage. And they're going to think, they're going to say, see, I told you so. He's done. Why did we not go Saros again? Like, and it's just not the case. Pecorine played very well tonight. He let a couple goals in that were just really good shots from the other team and just the product of a really good offensive team getting loose and getting open ice and making a good shot. That's how I feel about it.
I agree. And I mean, all you have to do is look at the high danger shots that he was facing. UC wasn't facing those first two games. So the high danger situation doesn't help us out. There were some defensive breakdowns. Really, I think that all three games, there's kind of been a slow start to that first period. The night that we get a quick start to the first period where we just get them right off the rip and we get them, from the jump and we can break out ahead, I think that's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun National Predators hockey because if we can play downhill, it's so much more just enjoyable. I mean, granted, we are the cardiac cats a lot of times, so that happens. But I think even tonight, I think we picked it up faster in the second period. But the second period, they were generating some offense. There was a lot of buzzing around, just putting some shots in front of the net and seeing what happens. And I think it does fall down to some puck luck. There are some times where it's just like, how does the puck not go in? And it's going to go in eventually. I think that if they keep doing that, good things will happen. We know that for a fact. But, the third period, we came on and we didn't give up. And I think that it's kind of going back to what Rich was saying about, you look at this team last year, if we go down, 3-1 in the third period last year, it's over. It might be 4-1 by the night's over. We're not going to get another goal. We're not going to be in it. We stayed in it. And, maybe that's due to some RV hustle. Finally, he lit the lamp. And maybe it's just due to the team mentality, but it's good to see that they didn't give up. They didn't quit on it till the very end. I mean, there was a last play, the last second, play where Holla didn't get off, didn't get back on sides. That was a little frustrating, and he's kind of having a little frustrated as a whole. I think Kunin's probably one of the better ones on that line against, opposite side of Duchesne. But, overall, I think that this team has some tenacity, and it kind of, especially someone that embodies it, Rocco Grimaldi tonight. I mean, he had a terrible mistake. Defensively, he's not been playing the best, but as far as his offensive game goes, that third period where he was rushing towards the net, fanned on the puck, and then fell down, and then he's the next guy to touch the puck. Like, guy falls down, hits the boards, jumps back up immediately, and gets another shot on goal. That's the kind of tenacity I think the fans want to see. That's what makes him such a special person at Smashville, is just that kind of grit that he shows, and we got to see that from the rest of the team, because that's how we're going to win games, especially if we got to climb back into it. We need that kind of tenacity.
Yeah, and I think it was good, too, seeing Arvidsson. He did finally get that goal, and it was a shot, man. I mean, it was like a cannon, and it was really good to see him, and especially since he was hurt earlier. Like, as soon as he fell and they took him back into the back, I was thinking the worst, and it was that's not good. We don't want to see any of them get hurt. And go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say that was a product of some tic tac toe passing from Duchesne to Johansson to RV for that wide open shot. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Arvidsson. That was a beautiful shot, perfect shot from Arvidsson. But that was team passing, right? That was setting up your zone time. That's setting up the play. We know Johansson is so outstanding at that. Mm-hmm. And he made the perfect setup, but Duchesne started it. And so I'm pretty sure he got the secondary assist on that play. And so that kind of started the comeback. And this team has me feeling like even when they're down two goals in the third period, they can make a comeback. I mean, I felt that way at times last year too, so I'm not overreacting through three games through this season. But I think a lot of it has to do with the new players on the team. I think they have a new energy for this team that they need. And so even in the loss tonight, and it stings, and it's never fun to lose, my confidence level hasn't been shaken at all in this team and what they did for the first two games and what happened tonight. I think it's just a matter of, you played against a good team, they can pounce on you quickly. You made a couple critical mistakes, and that's all it takes against good teams like the Carolina Hurricanes. That's all it takes, is a couple mistakes, and they will make you pay.
Yeah. Absolutely. I always feel a little guilty because, like, watching these first three games, I'm always, they get down the goal or whatever, and I always think back to last year, and I'm like, I got to stop doing that. I got to show more, support for them and just trust in them, because I'm just sitting there waiting for the shoe to drop. It's like, oh, here we go. This is when it's going to start right now. But I really think, like you said, they don't quit. They haven't quit. We got the defense is playing well. they're battling. The third defensive pairing is way better, like we've talked about before. And just I just think that, you know, I need to have a little more confidence in them. And just I think they're gonna, you know, they'll bounce back from this definitely.
We gotta keep the handlebar mustache growing because we got Forsberg on a point streak, so that's good. It's kind of sad to see, you know, Cunningham's point streak end, but as far as goal streak, I should say. And, but, you know, he still had a solid start to his season. Duchesne has impressed me. He was my biggest, like, you know, this was kind of, you know, I thought a show me season for him. And, you know, he hasn't scored yet, but he's in every play. I mean, he's creating some chances. I got to think Granny's going on that line. I think Granny's going to replace Holla. I kind of hope that's the case just because they played so well together the last year. But even without Granny on there yet, Duchesne is playing like a man on fire. Like he really is, you know, showing some tenacity and the sound kind of similar game to, you know, with the grit that we've seen Rocco. Duchesne's showing it, you know, with that second line and creating some opportunities and some scoring chances. So he's only going to get better too. I think Johansson tonight was kind of more of a rusty game for him. I think he still played, you know, better than he initially played last year. So that improvement is still going to continue to be made. And that really just comes down to coaching. It's going to be, you know, what's that post-game messaging that's going to come from John Hines and how are they going to respond tomorrow night? And we're going to find out really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to see Saros back in net, first back-to-back of the season. These two game sets are crazy. Like, it's got me – like, I've always been, you know, a huge NHL fan, but – I don't know if it's a product of just me being so like starved of hockey and all that stuff over the summer and, you know, only having the Stanley Cup qualifiers and then having to wait even longer. But I mean, I'm into like all these games, all these two game sets. Like I'm interested to see how the other team responds when they lose the first one. Like, it's like, we got to play that. We got to get ready. We can get revenge really quick against Carolina in less than 24 hours. I know this is just a product of the times we find ourselves in, but it's working out great. I think it's making it really interesting, really entertaining. It's like a quick turnaround. It's like you can't let your foot off the gas if you won. And if you lost, hey, you got less than 24 hours to get redemption. So it's just, you know, we get Pataki less than 24 hours from now and they can get some redemption. If they play the way they play tonight, again tomorrow, I think they're going to get some bounces their way. That puck luck we're talking about, I think some puck luck will go their way. And you get Saros in net. You just put that same game plan together, minimize some of the mistakes. That first period passing was really, really shaky.
Mm-hmm.
They were making some really, really passes that kind of kept them from getting some scoring opportunities in that first period. And then you made it through that first period and it was still 0-0. I think the Preds left some possible goals on the table in that first period where they could have maybe been the first team to score. But other than that, no reason to overreact to this loss or panic or get too upset over it. You went up against a good team. Time to move on.
Yeah, we have to think about, too, you know, Carolina beat the Red Wings. It was like 3-0 in their first game, and then they dropped the second one. You know that they were going to want some redemption for losing to Detroit, and it was
– for sure.
Detroit handled them pretty well in that game. I watched the end of it. So we had to look at that. And then what you mentioned about the passing and leaving some scores on the table, that one shot that Yossi had going into the net and he decided to pass it, I think he probably should have shot that. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying I'm better than Yossi or anything, but, you know.
What are you trying to say, Rich? What are you trying to say?
I'm not one of those guys who's like, what are you doing? You know, whatever. But I think you left one on the table there.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been some self-inflicted wounds I think are kind of easy to kind of work out as we get the season going just because it's so early in the season. But there are some times where, like, the offense is buzzing in the offensive zone and we're getting some good passes and some good shots, and then a guy will, you know, bounce the puck out past the defenseman and it'll go past the line and we'll have to clear the zone and start all over again. And that just – it kills the momentum. And I think, like I said, it's early season. It's taking off some rust and getting some of that stuff figured out. I will say the one place where, you know, I'm still kind of a little bit, you know, questioning, a little bit nervous is our power play. It's got me – the first unit looks pretty good. I mean, they're getting some opportunities. There are a couple of times for that first unit's out there where there's just some bounces in front of the net that they can go their way and they just haven't yet, but I think they will. the second line has not generated nearly the opportunities, especially in front of the net. They're not getting rebounds. They're not even really getting shots on the goal. And it really is kind of concerning to see that second line out there not producing in nearly the capacity that first unit is. So hopefully they get that figured out. On the flip side of that, penalty kill is pretty solid. I mean, you know, they put one in on us tonight on the penalty, but on the power play. But, you know, overall, I think the penalty kill has been pretty good so far. So, you know, we'll see. There's a lot to build on. That's the thing about this is that, you know, we have a season like this. It's going to shake out the way it is, get some quick, you know, chances to redeem ourselves a little bit. And, you know, we saw them once. Now we get to see them again and kind of, you know, apply the lessons learned. But it's fun to watch, especially right now, especially seeing the team grow. I think there's just a lot of potential. And beating Columbus, a team that was kind of, you know, right up there against, you know, with us as far as the rankings go, to beat them twice, it feels good. It makes me feel like we're in a good place and we're going to continue to be in a good place. So, you know, if we can win two and lose one and keep that going throughout the season, I think we'll be quite all right.
Well, what takes the sting off the loss, too, is the way they are playing. You know, they're hustling, they're getting out there, they're not giving up. And that makes the losses a little bit easier to swallow because last year, and we keep going back to that, but last year, you know, it would have been over. And we know that. And it was just when they give up and they don't play, that's what made those losses really hard to take. So hopefully we're over that.
So, good news never said die.
Yep. So with that, let's get into some early season surprises on the Preds, because I'm sure we all got some players that are on the team that have kind of been a little bit of a surprise, pleasantly surprised. Let's hope. And I'm going to get it started off with my biggest surprise, and it's definitely Luke Cunning and just how quickly he has picked things up. He scored a goal each of the first two games against Columbus. And even in tonight's game against Carolina, he was out there putting hits. I remember one big hit he put towards the end of the game when the Preds were trying to get that equalizer. I'm really impressed by his physical nature. Like, I love that. Like, you want to, yeah. Like, he's like the do-it-all type of player. Like, he's not going to go out there and match maybe what Craig Smith scoring pace did, or maybe even what Nick Bonino did, two guys we lost. But he is out there playing a very all-around style of game. And I didn't know a lot about him when we made the draft day trade for him. I had to kind of do my research on him. And then when his contract negotiations lingered into training camp, I just had a really bad feeling about it. I was like, is he even going to fit in on the fourth line? I was starting to feel like. And then the contract gets signed. He plays well in the scrimmages, scores a couple times in the scrimmages, and then he scores in the first two games against Columbus. And even tonight, even though he didn't score a goal, he did some good things out there. I mean, I'll be very interested to see some of his analytical numbers tonight. I feel like they're going to be pretty strong. I really feel like he had a really good game, even though he didn't necessarily come through with a goal. And so he's my number one Pred surprise for me is Luke Cunning. Rich, give me one of your big surprises.
I would say that third pairing, it's not really much of a surprise, but I'm really impressed with the way they're playing. And like we talked about it before, we probably mentioned it already, but it's good to see the third pair go out there and not make any mistakes, and they're working hard, and they're getting the hits, and they're playing well. And that's probably the best thing to see besides Philip Forsberg scoring for every game,
which isn't really a surprise.
Mm-mm. I agree.
The Forsberg isn't.
No, not at all.
One of the things I love, especially about that third pairing, is just Barwieski is a goon. Like, I love watching him away from the puck because he agitates. He's chirping. He's picking on people away from the puck, and it's just good to see that guy out there. But also, he's not making mistakes. So I agree with you, Rich, on that one, that third pairing. For me, it's actually Nick Cousins. Even from the scrimmages, I saw early on, but I've seen in the games too where he's just in the right place at the right time. And he may not be the guy that gets the assist. He may not be the guy that gets the goal, but he's going to set up the play that can make that happen. And he's, you know, he's fast when he needs to be fast. He's smart when he needs to be smart. But, you know, he's there where we need him to be. And he's the player we need him to be on that line. I call it that utility line, that third line. But I've really been impressed with him so far. I think he's only going to get better as the season goes too. So as soon as he starts building even more chemistry with those guys.
Yeah, definitely. Nick Cousins has been a really good, solid player for us. He's out there making things happen for sure. I'm going to go ahead and throw a Matthew Olivier in there as well, just because he wasn't on anyone's radar to be in the starting lineup, you know, over the offseason at all. And he has just really made the most of this opportunity that with the taxi squad and with the extra roster spots. And he just, you know, everyone's always thought of him as a really solid player for the Milwaukee Admirals. You know, unless there's a lot of injuries ahead of him, he's probably not going to be in the starting lineup very often. And he came out in the last game, not tonight's game. We have to wait to see the exact all the numbers on tonight's game, but against the Canes. But in the Columbus game, the previous game when he got in the lineup, he had 6 hits. I mean, he's out there just a wrecking ball, just mowing people down. And you love that for your fourth line players, because I mean, your fourth line players are the grit guys that are only going to get 10 to 12 minutes, maybe 13 minutes of ice time. But they're still just as important, because those are the players that if they're liabilities and they're out there just making foolish mistakes, then it doesn't matter what your top six is doing. They could be out there having a great game. But if your fourth line is a major liability and they're not out there playing a physical brand of hockey, then you're just going to get burned. You're going to leave your goaltender out to dry. So Matthew Olivier, I hope he gets more opportunities. I know that means – that Yakov Trenin might not get opportunities, and we all love Yak Attack. We all love Trenin, but there's only so much room on the roster. So it's kind of like makes you think like, okay, I'm sure they're going to be interchangeable. I even thought that Yakov Trenin would get in the game tonight against the Hurricanes, but it turns out they went with Olivier. How did you feel about that, Colin? Did you think that they should have gone with Trenin this game and seen what they have in him, or are you kind of cool with them sticking with Olivier?
I think you ride the hot hand, especially when you're saying, you know, with the style of play that he plays. I think it's very complimentary of Richardson too. I think, you know, the physical game, the smart hockey, I just think, you know, let the hot hand ride. It's not that they don't see what they see in Trenin. You know, they're seeing him in practice, especially with the taxi squad. You know, they know what he looks like. They've been able to see him in different opportunities, but it's just not there yet. And until Olivier, you know, makes a mistake or, you know, does something that, you know, proves that he shouldn't be there, I don't see why you should take him off necessarily in favor of Trenin. Eventually, you know, we're going to have to see what we have, and, you know, maybe we'll find out if we're getting them, you know, down the road and we got to make some changes, then that might be one of those changes. But until then, I'm happy with where it's at.
Yeah, I agree with Trenin. Over in the offseason, you know, when we thought we were actually going to lose him, you know, they were showing pictures of him going to play for in the KHL for Russia, and you know, all the fans were like, please sign him, you know, get him back on the roster, make sure we don't lose him. And then I guess Olivier is just showing them something that Trenin's not, or like you said, maybe they're just riding the hot hand. But I'm impressed with Olivier as well. I like how he just goes in there and, like you said, is just a bull in a china shop and just, you know, lays hits on people, and he's playing really well, and that's what we need.
You don't see him out there making any critical mistakes. Like, that's the big thing. Like, you don't see them out there costing the team. Because let's be honest, those new players on that fourth line, whenever you see a new player you're not used to seeing on that fourth line, they're under a spotlight. Fair or not, they're under a spotlight. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as they make a critical mistake, everyone's always quick to jump on them. Like, oh, this guy found his way in the lineup, and look what he did. He gave up this odd man rush and left Pecorine or UC Saros out to dry. So, you know, those players are under a lot of pressure, even though they're only playing, like, minimal amount of minutes. So I think Olivier's definitely been a huge surprise for me, and I'm glad to see him in the lineup. I love seeing new players out there. I'll wrap up my surprise player just with UC Saros, and it's not so much that I didn't know he already know that he was a good player or that I didn't have confidence in him, but he's always been a slow starter as far as when he starts a season. And again, I'm going to go back to that pressure. This guy's facing a ton of pressure because his contract's up. He's getting ready. I mean, no one knows what his future is. And if he comes out and just has a really, really awful season and the organization doesn't have confidence in him, it's going to make for a really weird offseason next year if the organization doesn't have confidence in him. The easy solution is he goes out and has a really good year. No matter what happens with the Predators as far as whether they make the playoffs or not, when we look back on the season, Let's hope that we don't look at Soros and think, well, it was because it's a direct correlation to Soros as to why we didn't make the playoffs or why we didn't, you know, meet expectations. It was because of Soros. As long as he can have a really good year, we can feel like we can build a team around him, then, you know, he'll get signed to a long-term deal and we'll be good. But there's a lot of pressure on him. And I think through his first two starts, he played very well. He played very impressive, especially that second game. And so I think he's got the weight lifted off his shoulders a little bit just by getting those two starts out of the way.
Yeah, and you especially want to see him come into his own over the next couple of years, just because in 4 or 5 years, if he's still playing top-notch hockey, he could be a great trade asset once Askarov is ready to go too. And I don't see him getting the no-trade clause like Pekka got, because Pekka was playing out of his mind before he got that no-trade clause, and that's the only one David Poile's ever given away. So, you know, I think that, you know, a few years on the road, hopefully he's still playing with that. But for right now, we'll take it. Maybe it's not the point in the season. Maybe it's the months. Maybe he's just not good in October and November, but once we get to January, he's all right, because he has been playing really solid for us.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. He has. He is under a lot of pressure, like we talked about with Askarov, and, you know, that's got to be in the back of his mind. He wants to have that long career probably like Pekka had, and, you know, it's all up to him. It's definitely just riding on his shoulders.
It's big skates to fill, and we see it in all sports. We see it a lot in football when a backup quarterback has to come up and replace a long-term starting quarterback. I've always kind of – it's an easy comparison to make, like in hockey and football, is the backup quarterback, starting quarterback, mm-hmm. franchise quarterback. It's the same idea going on here with and, you know, Peck has always been a mentor to Soros. And so it's just – I don't want to say a surprise to be like a knock on Soros, like I don't have faith in him, but I'm just like – I'm very pleased to see how he's handled his first two starts. And my confidence has definitely risen in him that he can go out and play well tomorrow. And, you know, if he can get a win tomorrow and play another great game, then you're going to start seeing people really start banging the drum to start Soros – you know, every chance they can, assuming it's not a back-to-back. I mean, that's you're going to start hearing that. So, and I'm okay with that, because it's, you know, like we're all saying, Soros has to prove that he's ready to take on that load. Even in a 56-game season, he's got to prove he's ready to take on that load. So, any other surprise players you guys got before we move on to the next segment?
Well, I really liked in the second game against Columbus, seeing Richardson get a score, that was awesome. Yeah. That was really good. They showed some really good depth scoring. Like that whole, you know, in that third period was just – that's the kind of hockey that we want to see.
Richardson's another blue-collar guy that, you know, mm-hmm. is just out there doing the dirty work. Again, he's on that fourth line that we're talking about that's really important when it comes to not being a liability, not making those – critical mistakes that burns your team. And, you know, one thing about the Preds is, you know, we'll have to see what happens with when Granlund gets in the lineup. Mm-hmm. But as of now, it seems like this team has an identity through three games. Yeah. There's no line blender going on here, or line salad, as Colin likes to say. It's pretty set. Now Granlund's move in and he has to be in the lineup. You can't not have him in the lineup.
No.
We all assume he's going to be on the second line. But it'll be kind of intriguing to see what Hines decides to do, because you don't want to be shaking up these lines too much, because through three games, even though they're 2-1, they did take a loss tonight. What they're doing appears to be working. So I don't want to shake it up too much. You know, like I don't want to like get crazy here, but you're going to have to a little bit just because of Granlund.
I agree. And I think that you look at the second line, like let's say that's theoretically where he goes. Duchesne and Kunin, or you know, Kunin have been playing well so far. So I know.
He said it. He said Kunin.
Duchesne and Kunin have been playing well so far, you know, and they've showed some chemistry. Holla, that's a question mark for me on that second line. Granny showed he can play with Duchesne last year. So I think that, you know, if we put those three together, then hopefully we got something figured out. And we got that second scoring line option that could be really formidable. Then it's like, okay, where do you put Holla? Do you put him on the third line? Do you put him on the fourth line? For me, I kind of question Yarnkirk on the fourth line. I know it sounds weird, but when we were talking about Olivia, I'm like, if we want to see Trent get a chance, I'm almost in place where we put Yarnkirk.
Well,
and see Trent get a chance.
So, Colin, I actually wrote a Predline. You know, we're all writers for Predlines.com for the Fansided Network as well. So go follow our work on there as well. I actually did an art. It wasn't necessarily well received, I'll be honest. But I did an article right before the season started saying that basically I wouldn't be that upset if Yarncroc was on the taxi squad and he's put on waivers, just because I'm sorry. Yeah. I feel like he's reached his ceiling. It doesn't mean that his career has been a bust or that I don't appreciate the things he's done or that he doesn't have value on the power play. I think he has all those things. I think he's got some really big goals in his future with the team this year. Not saying any of that. But again, it goes back to you've only got so much space on your roster. And even with the taxi squad, you still only got so much space. And you've got to start looking at these younger guys and seeing what they got. And I love Cal Yarncroc. He's done a lot of great things for this franchise. I'm sure someone would snatch him up if he did go on waivers. That would be the end of his time with the Preds. I don't think he'd be on the taxi squad very long. But I did write about that going into the season, that if there's one veteran that you've got to kind of let go and just make your peace with him, it's Cal Yarncroc. And again, that doesn't mean I don't have respect for him or anything like that. It's just sometimes you got to move on. You got to realize a player's reached their ceiling and you got to see what else is out there.
Right. I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, that's kind of where I put Hala, is that fourth line potentially. I like the utility of the third line with Rocco and with, you know, Cousins and Sissons. They're playing well. They're doing a lot of different things well, and that's really what's impressed me. And so for me, it's almost like Hala jumps to that fourth line, and then, like, you know, like I said, Yarncroc probably goes to taxi squad, goes on waivers, and we'll see if someone else wants him. I kind of think back, and this is, you know, getting way, way back, but I'm like, man, I kind of wish we would have kept Pontus Aberg over Yarncroc, but that's just me.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Well,
Hines Aberg was a good one.
Hines and Poyle even told everybody, you know, in their interviews, that don't be surprised if you see some of these guys who, like a Yarncroc, move down to the taxi squad and, you know, shift people in and out. I mean, that's just going to be the nature of it. You know, we've got these guys coming in who are playing good, like Cunning and Cousins, and you're definitely not going to move them around. So we got to let those other guys have their chance. And, you know, if you're not performing well, I'm not saying that Yarncroc isn't performing well or won't perform well, but, you know, you just got to slot these other guys in.
And theoretically, you know, you could put him just as a healthy scratch and put Tran back on the taxi squad. So there's some options if they really want to keep him, if they really don't want to see him going waivers. But, you know, it's just I don't see it right now. I've not seen it yet. He's not been terrible. It's just not – he hasn't really shown me anything. I think I've seen a little bit more from Hollow than I have from Yarncroc, so that's kind of where I'm at.
Well, it kind of seems like go ahead, Chad.
Yeah, Rich, what I was going to say, and I'm sure you guys agree with me, is just – so the thing about Yarncroc is he's got a great shot, deadly shot. He's definitely a good player on the second power play unit. That's where he's used a lot. That's most of his value. He's not a well-rounded player like a Luke Cunning is, or like a Eric Holla is. He doesn't really bring you a lot on defense. He doesn't really do a lot of the little things that you need in a fourth line player. And that's why you saw him move up the lineup so much last year, when there were so many injuries and other things going on, and Laviolette was basically just shaking a ball and seeing how it all came out every day. Yeah, it was like ping pong balls, and like, let's see how it's going to roll out today. I mean, it was like, you want to talk about
in all seriousness, him doing that, it probably hurt those guys more than it helped. I mean, it definitely was.
And we're not going to get on a long rant about Laviolette, because that could be a whole episode about Laviolette.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get into that, because we'll be here till 4 a.m. if we get into Laviolette and last season.
I was gonna say, if we go into last season, I could probably do a whole episode on why Kyle Turris killed the franchise. So
let's not do that. Let me bring home my point about Yarncroc real quick. Last season, he even saw time on the first line, and I thought he played pretty well. Like, I mean, he's a very good player that can do certain things offensively that make you love him. But he's not well-rounded enough for me. I just feel like he's hit his ceiling. And so that's kind of where we're at with it. And so we'll just have to see when Granlund moves in how that shakes things up. But let's move on. Let's let the dust settle on the first loss of the season. It's never easy. You always want your team to go undefeated, but it just doesn't happen, especially in hockey. In hockey, it's just a bad attrition. And the Preds take their first shot on the chin of the year to the Carolina Hurricanes, but they play again tomorrow. Let's get a broad scope of the NHL. It's very early. We're not even a full week into the season yet. Heck, the Dallas haven't even played a game yet.
Yeah, in Florida. So, Florida's only played one.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's just a wild season. But, Colin, give me like one or two teams that are just like, for better or worse, it could be a team that's playing horribly because and you thought maybe they'd be better, or a team that's playing really well, or just a standout player. Just overall, when you're looking at the NHL, what has really stood out to you in these early goings?
What stood out to me was, especially that for that night one, that opening night, seeing the Flyers and the Pens play. The Flyers just looked like they were on fire. I mean, they boat raced the Pens. And then they lose to the Sabres. And I'm like, what is going on? That's one of those things. I mean, I think they'll figure it out. I think they're still, you know, very much a contender. Looking back at my rankings for the East Division, I had them way too low. I'll own up to that. And
We did.
And deservedly so. I will say, I'll give them credit where credit's due. I like the Flyers. I think it's probably there's a gritty factor because I love Gritty. He's my second favorite mascot behind Nash.
He's pretty awesome.
He is. But yeah, they're my surprise as far as just like that little bit of a how good they were and then all of a sudden lose to Buffalo. That's just kind of the nature of the early season. And then the next team is the Coyotes. They've been hanging in there. They're one win and then one overtime loss, unfortunately, but you know, they look pretty solid. It's going to be tough to see comes out of that West. Cause I know Colorado's even slipped up a little bit. They've got a loss to their name. Granted, they took that loss and then they use that to exact incredible revenge. I don't think we're subject to the FCC, but they put on an ass whooping against the Blues. So that was nice to watch, to see them bounce back. I mean, it's kind of a Jekyll and Hyde type of thing because they play the Blues pretty close, but then that next game, after that loss, they put it to them. They took them to the woodshed. So, the Avs are the Avs. That's why they're one of the favorites, but it's going to be interesting to see if they can be consistent and see if the Coyotes might have a chance to kind of break out into the West a little bit.
What about you, Rich?
So I would say probably my biggest surprise was Edmonton's only won one game. They came out and they won, and then they've played horrible for the past, the past two games or whatever. And then another one would be it's not really a surprise, but it was kind of enjoyable watching St. Louis get destroyed and watching Bennington get yanked. I mean, that was a great thing to see. So that would probably be – that one. And then, I think I was surprised to see Boston was struggling a little more than they should be. They still don't have Pasternak in, but they just don't seem to be gelling quite yet. I actually watched the game today and got to watch Craig Smith play a little bit. And that was a little hard to watch, but overall, I just expected a little more out of them. So I don't know. I guess that would be a little surprising to me to see them have their struggles, but I think, all the teams have their struggles except for maybe Tampa Bay. They seem to be still firing.
Yeah. So, only a handful of games have been played. Most teams have only played two or three games. So we're not going to like make any crazy conclusions here, but I will say that a big surprise to me has been Pittsburgh. Like I expected, cause they still have a lot of the same core veterans. So you always expect them to be up there. But, I mean, I realize they beat the Capitals yesterday in overtime. But I just – the way they're playing, I don't see them – they might not even make the top four in their division, honestly. Like, I mean, I just don't see – their defense is being torn to shreds. They have no identity when it comes to their goaltending. As Preds fans, we love to see it, but I'm pretty sure in my division predictions, I still had them being in the top four. So I'm happy to be wrong because I never want to see the Penguins win at anything. I don't even want to see them win in pregame skate. Like, I want to see them losing everything. Like, but well,
they're actually in last place right now in the division.
Yeah. So kind of to turn that around. Also, when it comes to Chicago, they're going into tonight's games. Now, they were the only team that is 0-3 in the entire league. So that's really nice to see. I mean, a feel for them. If it was any other team, you'd probably kind of feel for them because they've been ravaged by injuries. They're missing Kirby Dock, which is their young up-and-coming star. And you never want anyone to go through injuries. You know, you don't wish that. You're not going to be a trashy fan that hopes for injuries or anything like that. You hope Kirby Dock comes back sooner rather than later. But I got to tell you, the Blackhawks, they look like they're in a world of hurt. And in turn, I think – let's talk about the Red Wings real quick, another team that we used to despise. We don't despise them as much because we don't play them as much. But I've actually liked what – you know, they beat Carolina in one game. Surprisingly, they made a comeback win. And even in their losses, I mean, they've battled. They might have a little fight in them. I don't think they're going to make a playoff spot, but I think they can definitely make some upsets this year. So they've been kind of a surprise to me. I like their young talent. I think they can catch some teams by surprise. So being a team, being a fan of the Predators, like, watch out for them. Like, if you go into that game overlooking them, they're a team that can that has some goal scorers. Larkin's the big guy that they lean on heavily. They're a young team. They're a hungry team. They're a few years away from really making a playoff run or anything like that. But they're a team that I think even in their three games and two of them have been losses, they've been kind of impressive in those games. They've played well and battled hard.
I will say, I got to add one thing about Tampa Bay. Just because going back to Chicago, Chicago is Chicago. They're not doing well. So for me, like, Tampa Bay is off to a hot start, but how hot is it? Because is Chicago really a good barometer for that? I mean, they're playing against the likes of Malcolm Subban, and, you know, they're putting some easy ones in. Chicago did not look good. Tampa Bay looked good, but I think anybody almost, you know, looks good in comparison to some of the stuff that Chicago's rolling out. So it'll be interesting to see them play another opponent that's not, you know, not the lowest team in the division right now.
So here's a surprise. I was just checking scores. We were talking about the Flyers earlier. The Sabres beat the Flyers tonight. The score was 6-1. The Sabres had 37 shots on goal, and the Flyers only had 22. So
yeah, that just blows my mind.
That's a little surprising to hear.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the nature of things. Like, it's such a crazy season with this.
I think what we're going to see this season is a lot of crazy swings. Like, you're going to see a team look really hot for two games, and then they're going to catch the wrong team at the wrong time, and they're going to get swept by that team. These two game sets change the whole dynamic of how this season's going to go compared to a normal 82-game season where, you know, your schedule's spotty, and for the most part, you don't play the same team twice in a row. Every now and then it happens, but – for instance, last year the Preds got that back-to-back against the Stars where they won right before the pause. But for the most part, it doesn't happen. This season, it happens the entire season, and it's gonna make for some crazy results. Rich, what were you about to say?
I was just going to say I was checking another one, another score. It's not really all that much of a surprise because the Canadians are really good, but they're beating the Oilers 3-1. The Oilers just scored, and there's 2 minutes left in the game, so – I haven't got a chance to watch the Canadian games yet. I really like to watch them.
I haven't either.
But they're looks like they're putting it on the Oilers right now, and the Canadians are on the power play right now. So,
The thing about the schedule, there's a lot of get right games. You can go down one and then hopefully get it right the next time, or you can go down even worse. So we'll see what happens.
And tomorrow's a get game for the Preds. Real quick, I'd share our poll that we put out for the Catfish and Ice podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Catfish Ice. We put a poll out yesterday, so this was before the game against the Hurricanes. So these results might be shifted after tonight's game. Hopefully fans aren't that overdramatic over one game. But our results were basically we just asked, has your confidence level increased at all after the first two games for the Preds? As far as them making the playoffs, because there were a lot of fans out there that were like, we're not going to make the playoffs. We're going into rebuild mode. it's time, you know, we can kiss our playoff chances goodbye this year. We have a lot to figure out. A lot of fans felt that way. The sentiment was very, very low for this team going after coming out of the Stanley Cup qualifiers and all the changes that were coming. And so so we asked that, and 57% said slightly, and there was a tie for 22% with not at all and increased a lot. So you got that wide range of emotion of, oh, yeah, my confidence is really increased. Oh, and you've got that those people that are like, nope, it hasn't increased at all. So slightly it was 57% from our poll voters, which is what you would expect to see because you can't overreact too much to two games. And then after tonight, hopefully those same people that were slightly confident in their confidence level probably should feel the same way because you lost to a good team and you still battled hard. But I'm just interested to track that throughout the season, how fans feel with this new look Preds team as far as making the playoffs, because we're so used to making the playoffs in Nashville. I mean, it's kind of like, it's almost like a right to bear, like we're going to make the playoffs at least, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree. Missing the playoffs. Yeah.
Well, especially ahead, with this division, it's tough. I mean, there are some teams that we're close to. And so for me, like, the reason I would say slightly is just because we, like I said, we beat the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's kind of the team that everybody has been stacking us against. And so it's nice to be the one that is on top in that situation. But then you got the Panthers. And so you don't know what they might do. They might have a good season. And they, like I said, they were on the cusp last year of having a really good run. So you just never know. But I do feel good. I think this is – overall, I'd say we've improved. And, you know, last year we were that close to making the playoffs. Obviously it didn't work out for us. But we were close last year. I think we've taken already, you know, the next step or at least progressed since last year. We're playing some team hockey. It looks, you know, better. It's more fun to watch. So, you know, I got more confidence. Ask me in a couple of weeks, and we'll see where I'm at then. But
it's hard with
three games.
Yeah.
So on that poll, I've voted for slightly as well. I'm cautiously optimistic. I like what I see. They're playing really well. They're battling. They're fighting. They know what us as fans have been saying, that they're soft. They were soft last year. I think they all know that, and they want to turn it around, and they're moving towards turning it around, and they're making a lot of good decisions. They've just got some things they need to button up, and I think they'll be fine down the road.
I like to think that Ryan Ellis has my mean tweets pinned in his locker, and he uses that for motivation.
Rich, just for your sake, I hope that Mark Borowiecki doesn't hear you call this team soft this year, because
I don't even know what I would do. No, they're not soft this year. They were last year. They're definitely not soft this year.
You're gonna go, let's say they start looking soft. Are you just gonna go put Mark Borowiecki in that category where he can't be soft no matter what, just so you can protect yourself?
I don't know. I've seen the dude, like, videos of him putting on Instagram working out. He beats the crap out of a bag. So
the Catfish on Ice podcast is officially going to be – everything's going to be positive about Mark Borowiecki, no matter what.
I'm pretty sure that dude wouldn't even be soft if he was on the IR. He'd still probably punch someone with a broken arm.
So we're – nothing but good things to say about Mark Borowiecki, because we want to be on his good side. Let's put it that way.
And Benning too, though. I mean, he's a tough dude. I mean, he gets out there and does the, you know, he's pretty much, they're a good complement to each other. I'll say that. And Benning is taking some shots. He took a shot in the game against Columbus right in the wrist, and he dropped the stick and he stuck with it. And that's what we want to see. And that's probably my favorite thing to see is watch those guys battle.
Benning, Borowiecki, and then Olivier. That's the Bash Brothers squad right there for us.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got to make some shirts on that, Colin. Bash Brothers. I love that term you used in the last episode. Bash Brothers is a perfect way to describe that unit and those guys. And that's what we were calling for all offseason. And David Poile went out and did that. So we're just waiting to see those results now. But they look good. Even though we had a loss tonight, it looked good. So now we're going to switch gears. In episode 10, I ran a solo episode in episode 10, if you want to go back and listen to it. And I listed my top three NHL venues I want to go to as a fan. I had this little bucket list that I started just a couple years ago, where I want to basically mark off every arena. At some point, I want to get them all knocked out, which is going to be hard to do. But that's why you make a bucket list. It's fun to do. You hope you can finish it. And so I listed my top three. And just as a refresher, if you didn't get to listen or if you forgot, I listed in no particular order. I listed Montreal as my Canadian team I want to really go to see, as all out of all the Canadian teams, I'll get a game in Montreal and see that passionate fan base. I definitely want to go to Detroit and see Hockey City USA, go to the Motor City, see those passionate fans. Because even though that team has been bad for a while, I know how passionate those fans are, and I think it would be a fun atmosphere to be there to mark off. And then I also listed the Chicago Blackhawks. And I also mentioned that I would probably live to regret that, because that fan base would probably – that fan base would probably not like my Preds gear at all, but that's what makes it fun.
I was going to tell you, I got booed in the Chicago airport just wearing a Preds sweatshirt. So, and that's happened twice. So yeah,
in the airport.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. But that's part of the fun of it. That's part of the fun. That's kind of the fun of this exercise. And that's kind of the fun of, for me, that's the joy I get in being an opposing fan, is as long as you're not an asshole about it and you're not like, you know, like no one likes the people who take it too serious and they just get like, but like it's fun to go into an opposing arena wearing your gear and cheering for your team, as long as you're not, you know, being a jerk about it, but still having fun. I think that's the fun of it. So going to a game in Chicago for me would be the peak of that as a Preds fan, because I'm sure I'd get a lot of really bad looks and all that stuff, but I think it'd be fun. So who wants to Rich, you want to start it off? Just give like a couple of your arenas that you'd like to go to.
So I've been to, obviously, to Bridgestone, and then the only other arena I've been to, I had the opportunity to go with my brother. He lives in Virginia, and we went to watch a Capitals game, and he had a hookup with someone he worked with, and we were five rows from the glass. So it was really exciting, and like my brother's not really into that sports that much. And like they were playing the Devils, Capitals, Devils. And I was like, you're in for a treat. The Capitals are going to destroy them. Ovechkin is the man. It's going to be awesome to watch him play. The Devils beat him like 5-2. Ovechkin didn't even have, he had no goals, nothing that night. It was horrible. And I was just like, so disappointed. I just wanted to watch him just dominate and, you know, show my brother. Like
that would have.
Yeah, I was totally just talking him up, and it just didn't happen.
That would have been cool to say you saw Ovechkin score a goal in person. That would have been a cool thing, even though
they lost, it was a lot of fun because we were so close to the glass. I mean, like PK Subban was like 10 feet away. I mean, it was awesome to see him. But as far as my bucket list, at first I was thinking about it, and I thought it would be kind of cool to see all the original six teams play. I've been in the United Center, not for a hockey game, but – and it's a really nice arena, and it'd be cool to see all those guys. But I think I'd really like to go to Toronto and watch a game against the Maple Leafs, just to feel that hockey history and all that. I mean, I know they don't play in the arena they played in back then, but it'd just be cool to see one of those teams that's been around forever to watch those guys.
Colin, what about you, man?
Yeah, I would say my first one would be the Garden, TD Garden for the Bruins. I just love Boston in general. I would love to get a big heaping bowl of lobster mac and cheese for a watch the game. Wash it down with a good beer and just hang out in Boston and see that team play. And obviously they're doing well right now. So, you know, that's another, you know, plus two. And Smitty. Smitty's always going to have a place in my heart. So I want to see him do well, even if he's not with us anymore. It'd be nice to see him play well.
Yeah.
And then my next one, I'm actually from Arizona, so Hill River Arena in Arizona in Glendale, just because it's kind of fun to, you know, think about a hockey arena right in the middle of the desert. So that's a good one. And then my last one is Rogers Place in Edmonton, just because that place looks like a starship just landed in Canada. It looks pretty badass. So definitely want to go see that one.
Those are all good ones that I would definitely like to see. As well, one more I'm going to throw out, and I hear it's very similar to the Preds atmosphere, and that's Tampa Bay. I hear that they have really embraced the whole, you know, Southern hockey thing, and you can tell when you're watching games, and a lot of that has to do with how good they are. You know, if you're a good team like the Tampa Bay Lightning are, you're going to get the fans. But that I've heard, I've got some friends who are from Tampa And they can't say enough how similar the two atmospheres are, Bridgestone Arena and Tampa Bay Lightning game. So that would be it's escaping me what their arena is called. But I think that would be another cool one. They don't have the history, the other ones we're talking about. And for me, I would want to go to the places that have the history first, mm-hmm. that have that that nuance and have that old school fan base, generation upon generation upon generation of fans, and just seeing the tradition and all that stuff. I think that ranks first for me. But like I said, I hear a game in Tampa is a lot of fun. It's very similar to a game at Bridgestone Arena. So
I think it's a little fan base in general. You look at like the Rays, Tampa Bay Rays, even like UCF, you know, the Tampa Bay just in general seems like they got a lot of loyal fans all throughout that city. So I can definitely see that and agree.
Awesome. All right. So that's going to do it for episode 11 of the Catch Podcast, Broad Podcast Network. Real quick, one more time, I want to bring up DraftKings. We got the big fight coming up for UFC. Conor McGregor's making his return. And DraftKings Sportsbook we have a promo code going for all of our listeners. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook app and type in promo code THPN. We're going to add the logo here so you can see it for all of our viewers. You see it right there. Use promo code THPN for DraftKings. You can turn a $1 bet into $257 if Conor McGregor knockout in the first round this weekend. I know there's a lot of hockey fans that are also UFC fans as well. Please do not ask me to give you any in-depth UFC knowledge because I will fail. Yep. I haven't watched UFC in a while, but I will say I do know who Conor McGregor is, so I guess I get some points for that. I know he's a crazy dude. But anyway, DraftKings.com. Definitely download their sports book because it's pretty fun and you can bet on all the sports. It's legal in Tennessee. It's legal in a lot of states now. And so basically you're using that promo code THPN for our listeners and you can turn an easy $1 bet into a big win and you can have some fun out there betting on some sports if that's what you're into. If not, you can just sit back in your chair and just enjoy sports that way as well. But there's a lot of sports bettors out there and DraftKings.com is where you want to go for that. So download the app and use that promo code THPN. Until next time, episode 12 will be coming to you later this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Chad Vick, joined by Rich Howe and Colin Bluen. This has been episode 11 of the Catfish Nights Podcast brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. Safe everyone, and we will see you very soon.